Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Rev Midnight Black Mass, a production brought to you by GeorgeWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you discussions and interviews with figures from entertainment and general pop culture. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Midnight Black Mass.
Devil sends the beast with wrath because he knows the time is short. Let him who hath understanding reckon the number of the beast, for it is a human number. Its number is 666.
I left alone. My mind was blank.
Yeah.
Ghastly greetings to all children who are devil's children and the knights in Satan's service. It is I, the R.E.V. to the motherfucking D, the devil you know, the Reverend Dan Wilson, here for the final edition of the Midnight Black Mass on the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network. It has been a true pleasure entertaining you all for almost a year here on the GWH Network, and we will miss Rich Tate and our colleagues, but, you know, times come and times go, and opportunities do too, and we're moving to a new home at www.pottyhumor.com, that's PLDDYHUMOR, pottyhumor.com, will be the new home of the Midnight Black Mass. We also have an exclusive comic book only podcast called Get Your Pulls that already airs weekly. The Midnight Black Mass debuts next Friday night at midnight on www.pottyhumor.com. Hopefully to continue a great relationship with GWH. I'm always going to be plugging their stuff. Also going to be appearing with Jonathan Williams on Georgia Wrestling Now to plug pottyhumor.com, as well as my various wrestling ventures here in just a couple of weeks. So stay tuned for that. I have not left you forever, GWH. I'll be dropping in from time to time. On to the pro wrestling news. Tomorrow night, the big night in Cornelia, Georgia. And if you're a Southern wrestling fan, you better get some boots on your feet and move your ass on down to Cornelia, Georgia for Hostile Environment 2012. Main event is going to be a big 12-man elimination tag with the fate of NWA Anarchy at stake, as Jerry Palmer and Brody Ray Chase have two teams that are going to fight. Now, I've got my entry in here with the Angel of Death, Azrael, on Team Anarchy for the first time ever. And the NWA Elite will stand across the ring from us. It is going to be one hell of a battle, and only the last men remaining. It's going to be single elimination, 12 guys that got to go through. Going to be a hell of a fight. $15 is the admission. It's going to be a hot one, but they're giving away free water. So you want to come down there tomorrow night, 8 o'clock p.m., international television taping. Go to NWAAnarchy.net for more details. Coming up, NWA Chattanooga on July the 20th in Sail Creek, Tennessee at Sail Creek Middle High. I had to cancel last week's show, or postpone rather, due to some air conditioning issues with the venue. Those have been addressed. The NWA Southeastern Tag Team Tournament will take place Friday night, July the 20th at Sail Creek Middle High, along with my man, the Southeastern Champion, Andrew Alexander, defending his title against the future legend, Kyle Matthews. All that and a whole lot more. You'll know where to catch me around if you follow me on Twitter at Dragons Rejects, or you go to our official Facebook page at The Revs Midnight Black Mass. That's facebook.com/Midnight Black Mass. On to the music news. First of all, we do have a special guest tonight, and we'll keep a lid on that until he comes on the show. He's been on the program before, a very instrumental man in helping the Midnight Black Mass get off the ground, and has done a whole lot for the show, and we look forward to talking to him later tonight and his music related, but that's all I'm going to give you for now. But on to the music news. In my world, last Saturday night, I had a religious experience, people. I saw in person, live with my own eyeballs, the legendary Iron Maiden. But, that's not all. Also, another legendary act on my bucket list, the one and only Mr. Alice Cooper, was the opener for that program. And let me tell you something. These guys, at 40, 50, 60 years old, they are kicking the ass of every young punk half their age out there touring today. They had more energy, more enthusiasm, and more talent than most of them. And it really showed through. True showmans in every sense of the word. I've waited my entire life to see Iron Maiden live. They never tour in the South. They haven't been in the South for 20 years. And, I was probably 10 and wasn't driving a few hours to go see them, when I didn't own a car. So the first time in my entire life I had the opportunity to see Iron Maiden, and man, they didn't disappoint. Neither did the Coop. Just fantastic, fantastic show all around. And that tour is still going on, folks. So if you're out there, go to their websites and check it out. IronMaiden.com will have all the tour dates for you. You definitely, definitely want to check that out. If you like either of those bands, it's a show you're never going to forget. And, of course, you heard earlier at the beginning of the broadcast, in tribute to that experience, the one and only Number of the Beast, an appropriate song to end the final show of Midnight Black Mass here on the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network. Crazy news coming out of the Lamb of God camp. Frontman Randy Blythe is currently being held in a Czech Republic prison on manslaughter charges after the death of a fan at a May 2010 show. The details are sketchy on this. They're out there. The police in Czech Republic have made some comments. Lamb of God's publicist also has Adrenaline PR. They've stated that Randy Blythe was wrongly accused, and the lawyers are dealing with it. We expect him to be fully exonerated. That is from the Gauntlet website. So very, very interesting. We supported Lamb of God. Apparently, it's not cool to like them anymore. So apparently, amongst snarky ass metal fans, you know, they're laughing because this guy's going through a hell of a time. And I say, what if it was you, you fucking little pussy, huh? What if it was you, you little fucking punk? You couldn't fucking handle it. This guy, he's surviving over there. He's coming out, hopefully, at some point. He'd talk all this shit. Hey, you know, I listen to what I like. You don't like it, then fucking do something about it, bitch. Okay, anyway, moving on. But anyway, the best to Randy Blythe. We've had some of the Lamb of God family on the program. Mr. Confederate Mac is a man that came up with him in the Richmond, Virginia area, and still friends with many of them to this day. So we definitely send our well wishes and hope he gets out of that mess real fucking soon, because nobody wants to be locked up abroad. There's another reality show. Testament, the legendary Bay Area thrash metal band Testament, has released a brand new track from their new album, upcoming Dark Roots of the Earth. They've announced tour dates. And we actually have that cut here for you, courtesy of streaming audio from Nuclear Blast USA and Blabbermouth.net, and that's up there. You can go check it out at your leisure, but we're also going to provide that for you here on the program later. Something that just made me laugh was that, and not anything against them, because, you know, they're a fucking good band if you're into death metal, the Dying Fetus hits the Billboard charts for the first time. So I can only imagine what the corporate committee, as they look down the list and see a band called Dying Fetus on the Billboard Top 200. That's quite fucking humorous to me. Also, another humorous anecdote is that Lars Ulrich has stated in a recent interview that he believes his drumming skills have regressed. Really? You think? I don't really think there's any comment on that from Metallica fans. I'm not going to hate on Lars. He certainly is a brilliant businessman and has filled his role in the band for many years. He did what I couldn't do, you know, so can't hate on him too much. But that's why the Metallica fans have said that for a long fucking time. Don't tell nobody, though. And then get well wishes. Well, not get well, because actually nothing happened. I'm sorry. Joey Belladonna was almost mauled by dogs in an interview. It's a crazy news week here in the heavy metal world. Joey Belladonna, singer of Anthrax, almost mauled by dogs during a video interview. But thankfully, he escaped. So Anthrax's upcoming tour and album plans look to still be a go. And that's a good thing for them, because we like Anthrax. But, folks, we got the Mood Your Movie Minute coming up after the break. We've also got our special guest coming up after that. We've got TV Casualty and more here on this final edition on the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network. Right now, we're going to go to some Judas Priest, 1978, off of the legendary, iconic Stained Glass album. This song is called Saints in Hell. We'll be right back. And we're back with another edition of the Midnight Black Mass, the final one on the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network. It is now time for the Muji Movie Minute, where the Rev's best pal, Muji, has scoured the compound and beyond for the best and worst of horror cinema. And this week, we look at part three of John Carpenter's Apocalypse Trilogy, In the Mouth of Madness.
What is up? This week, we're talking about the, like I said, the third one, In the Mouth of Madness from 1995. John Carpenter flick starring Sam Neill, who you might know from Jurassic Park. If you don't know him from that, then you don't know him from any fucking thing ever. Maybe Jurassic Park 3 somehow value you with a Walmart, and that was the one that was $5, and that's the only one you saw, so I'm sorry. But a pretty cool flick. Like I said, it's the third one in his little apocalyptic trilogy. They don't really tie together all that much, except for the fact that they're about the apocalypse. He made three movies about it. It's an easy way to sell a box set, I think.
Just probably.
Putting it all together. I don't know if he set out to do that originally, but a pretty cool movie. A lot of things in there that have been done a billion times, but a lot of it's been done a billion times since. A lot of the things in there. Thought the movie's pretty cool. Of course, the basic plot is your main guy has a bunch of crazy shit happen. Then he gets this book, In the Mouth of Madness, that is basically telling all these crazy things that start happening in his life, and then he realizes that, hey, maybe I'm living the book. Maybe I'm the one that's causing this to happen, and maybe I'm reading about myself, but you don't know. It kind of ends on the, you know, you don't know if he's crazy, or you don't know if he's, you know, living in a dream, or maybe he's just a psycho that's made all this up the whole time. Without giving away specific plot points. You know, a lot of movies like that. Secret Window, a good example. Identity, a fucking terrible example of movies that kind of go with, like, that kind of plot point. But it's definitely a cool movie. It's a strong entry into John Carpenter's host of films. You know, it was 1995, so all of his really, really good movies probably came from the 80s and, of course, the late 70s. But they had a couple of good ones in the 90s. So, like I said, you reminded me off air that Vampire came out after this. I thought maybe this was his last real good movie, but Vampires was pretty good, so that was definitely a success. Movie's cool, a lot of great people in there. We got some Mr. Lionel Luther himself,
Donald Glover
hanging out. You can't beat a little Charlton Heston, just coming a couple years after the Wayne's World cameo. He does a lesser known but also awesome cameo in this movie. Little scene. And like I said, it's a cool flick. I think it's as strong as the other two movies from the series. I think they kind of went in reverse order with The Thing, arguably his masterpiece. I mean, I think Halloween's his best movie ever just because of its importance. But The Thing, you know, it might be the thing you show if you want to show everything John Carpenter can do in a movie. And then Prince of Darkness is good. This is a little less good, but still good.
Yeah, I enjoyed In the Mouth of Madness. It really... I like movies that can take you out of reality, and they definitely made that movie to fuck with people. You know, he just the scenes, the replays as he goes deeper and deeper into madness. And there's no real resolution at the end. It's just the fucking shit hits the fans, and he goes inside a theater and watches clips of himself denying the existence of this psychotic reality, and then the world just fucking burns while he's doing it. So that's pretty much it. What was the star rating, or the percentage, rather?
I gave it 70%. 70% well done. It was cool.
70% is fine by me. John Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness. We've got a lot of John Carpenter flicks here on the Muji Movie Minute. That will continue over at pottyhumor.com. Anything else you want to say to plug the new site before we go? We've got some more tunes. We're going to play that New Testament for you coming up before we have our special guest on the line.
I know. Just remember, pottyhumor.com, PODDYHUMOR.com. That's where Midnight Black Mass is going, where we have Get Your Pulls. We'll eventually have more than just that over there, probably. But we got at least that for now. And also, subscribe to us if you like the show. Go check out Get Your Pulls on iTunes. Subscribe to that. And then also, the Midnight Black Mass will be on iTunes very soon also. Subscribe to that on there, too, so that we can feel good about ourselves.
We can feel like legitimate podcasters.
Real Potters.
Real Potters, yes. The Midnight Black Mass going to iTunes, fans. That's we're excited about that, so be sure to go subscribe to it, as the great Muji said. And thank you again for joining the program, my friend. The Muji Movie Minute, always bringing you up to date on the best and the worst of horror cinema from the compound and beyond. In our first edition of the Muji Movie Minute on Potty Humor, we're going to look at Piranha 3, Double D. The titties get bigger, and hopefully there's more blood.
Probably the shit gets bigger, too.
We'll see you next week, with fans, on another Muji Movie Minute at PottyHumor.com. Right now, I was promising you New Testament, and I ain't holding out on you, man. Here it comes, off the upcoming album, Dark Roots of the Earth, the brand new track, True American Hate, and this one's got the fire. That's awesome, man. That is awesome. And so is that something you're planning on continuing to do? Is the horror conventions, you're looking at lining up more appearances around the South, or was that just a singular venture for the wild mind of Mr. Everett?
Well, hopefully there'll be some more of that to come. My longtime and dear friend, Ray Franks, a.k.a. Abby Normal of the the name's escaping me at the moment here, but Ray at one time played in the Frankenstein Drag Queens, and he's also owns a comic book store, and he's become a convention promoter of sorts. He's done one before, the Comic Monster Con, and he has one of those coming up again. He's going to do this coming year in Greenville, South Carolina, and I hope to be involved in that in some capacity. His current band, it just came to me, as Graveyard Boulevard.
Okay, cool. Well, that sounds extremely interesting. Speaking of horror, we're talking about John Carpenter's In the Mouth of Madness tonight, looking at the Carpenter Apocalypse trilogy, which aren't the most beloved of, it is of the most beloved of his movies to some people, but you got any thoughts on that, or even anything else you've seen lately that you just want to fucking talk about, man?
In the Mouth of Madness was one of my all-time favorite movies. I mean, I own it, of course, and never get tired of it, and it certainly didn't hurt that Mr. Charlton Heston showed up there in that movie, because the things that man did over the span of his career, many, many things, had a lasting and never-ending effect on me. But, I thought the mood and the script and the nightmarish way that film delivered was very effective.
Yeah, it really had that the descent into madness, and a lot of films try to pull that off, and not a lot of films are successful in really placing you in that moment of, like, you can really feel the walls coming down around you of sanity, and they really pulled that off, and In the Mouth of Madness, in a big way.
I'm trying to recall any particular movies I've seen in the recent past that have affected me. I usually wait and just go see things when they hit the budget cinema, and I did see Cabin in the Woods, and I liked parts of it, and other parts I wasn't so impressed with. I didn't really like the back and forth movement between the control center and then the real action that was going on in the woods and the cabin and the surroundings.
I saw the previews for that, and I've heard nothing but rave reviews from a lot of people. But I've not actually seen Cabin in the Woods. I did see in the previews how they had the control center thing and bounce back and forth. They kind of gave you an intimation of what that was going to be. But I've heard it's highly imaginative, but, I don't know. I'm always hesitant until now that you have weighed in on it. I am anxious to see it, because that's an opinion. You're a real motherfucker, my friend, and that's an opinion I value.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, the basic premise, Dan, was that, the people in the control center had to pay homage through sacrifice to the ancient ones, which you and I know goes straight back to Mr. H.P. Lovecraft, and they just pretty much left it there. Like, for the general public, they didn't delve into Lovecraft mythology with any depth, and it was just what they were putting these unsuspecting kids through in the woods to sacrifice them to the ancient ones.
Ah, a lot of Lovecraftian things out there in the discussion today. Of course, In the Mouth of Madness has about 15 fucking H.P. Lovecraft references throughout it.
But
highly influential all throughout music, throughout film, and literature, and everything else.
And Mr. Lovecraft meant enough to me that once upon a time I took a trip up the East Coast and back down, and he was part of it. I made going to his grave in Providence, Rhode Island, a very big part of that trip.
Ah, that's awesome. See, you always have the coolest road stories. You're the guy that I always say, you just fucking want to see something, you want to do something, you just say, fuck it, I'm doing it. And that's an admirable trait, bro.
What would probably really surprise you about that is that if you go to Providence, Rhode Island, and take any kind of reference book on Lovecraft, is that you go to certain addresses where he lived, there's no marker, no nothing. These places are just rental places that have college people living in them to this day.
Wow. You'd think the tourist industry, if nothing else, would capitalize on the influence that Lovecraft has had, but... You know, the horror genre, whether it be movie or literature or what have you, it tends to always get shit on by the outsiders, so to speak. So that's really not a surprise, I guess.
And by far, you know, I know you've weighed in on my page, and I appreciate that. By far the most important things, you know, musically I've been privy to lately were, you know, both meeting and hanging out with Bob Burns and then spending even more time with Artemus Pyle. Just invaluable experiences, and I can't say enough about how those experiences affected me all the way to the heart, how both those men embraced me, you know, after what they were involved in. Bob was the drummer on the first two Skinner albums, and Artemus was the drummer from Nothing Fancy all the way up to the plane crash.
That was some really, really intriguing shit about Artemus and the time you spent with him, and I really did want to touch on that in detail as much as you wanted to share about that. I would encourage, I don't know if you've made it public or just there on your Facebook page, but if you ever do decide to put it out to the public eye, I would encourage the listeners to really read that piece. It was really moving.
Yeah, well, you know, that's part of my problem in this life, that I can't, you know, I've probably written such few things that became widespread because I can't write about something unless I feel passionate about it, and I, you know, I bled to write that, and I sat and went over and over, and it took me quite a while, and I felt like, you know, after what he gave me, if I was going to write anything about it, I had to do him justice.
And he really had a story to tell there about his relationship with the other band members and kind of the friction in the band since the passing of the original lineup, or at least the ones that did pass in the plane crash, which was, you know, a good deal of the important ones, of course, Ronnie Van Zant, the fire behind the soul of Skinner.
Yeah, you know, what's so important to me that comes through Artemus in the boldest of ways, you know, the second time that I've hung out with him, I just went to see him, and he did get to play a full live set this time, and, you know, he walks out from behind those drums halfway through and comes to the front of the stage and says, you know, this is for Ronnie, long live Ronnie Van Zant. That's why he's up there doing this, and there's so little of that remaining in any form of the arts today, and that he was that close to Ronnie, and that he knows Ronnie's spirit, and he feels obliged to carry on and honor him that way as long as possible. You know, that was undeniable to me, and I couldn't help but be touched by it profoundly.
I can only imagine. I mean, there you have a guy that fucking lived it. A real badass in every sense of the word, also through what he went through and then being a former Marine and what have you. But to be able to reach out there and put his soul forth in the music, which really to me is the language, it's the universal language. It does transcend our bodies and whatever you want to call it in this crazy existence. But fucking music is the language of the soul, no doubt.
Well, his band was top notch. I have to give him that. And he had a guy on keyboards that was handling the lead vocals. And you know, you're not gonna approach the world of Ronnie, but he did it as much justice as possible. And they played the songs very accurately. And you know, they played everything from Working for MCA to Freebird to Saturday Night Special to I Ain't the One. And, I mean, for most of that stuff, I just stood there with goosebumps up and down.
Yeah, that's pretty fucking impressive. But are they touring at all, or was that just, is he living out there and just doing shows around?
That segues right into something I wanted to touch on. I think they play mostly like weekends, you know, regionally. He is doing that like Southern Rock cruise again here in the near future, but I think it's regionally stuff mostly. Like I think the other guys are working guys, but he approached me this past time about possibly, you know, working for him as a personal assistant of sorts, and what an honor. And yeah, it's something I'm definitely interested in talking about.
Oh man, yeah, that could provide you a volume of a novel in and of itself to write of experiences, just to spend time on a daily basis with a guy like that, and to share a little piece of that brain. That's pretty fucking cool, man. I hope that works out for you.
Oh, I'm above and beyond that, Dan. I mean, the first time we met, you know, by the end of the night, he issued me an open invitation to come and spend, you know, a weekend with him and stay at his house with him in Asheville. And, you know, I mean, what do you even say to that when someone who's affected you that much and that deeply throughout your whole life, like, you know, takes you into that degree? I mean, what an honor. I mean, what else can I say?
Yeah, I can only compare that to having a good relationship with some of my wrestling heroes, you know, that you work in the business with for a long time. You get to know guys like Dory Funk Jr. and Bill Eady. I've had the pleasure of spending, you know, some real time with those guys outside the ring. And, you know, when you look up to these guys as a kid and you get to know them, and they're class acts to boot, because a lot of times, of course, you know, you can put somebody up on a pedestal for so long and they turn out to be a fucking cocksucker, and that's not cool either. But, you know, when they really deliver the goods and are everything you expected and more, there's really no other experience like it. And I probably, would, even in a musical sense, can't even relate, but that's the closest thing I could compare it to, so to speak.
Well, whether it's music or wrestling or literature or what have you, I mean, it's all it comes down to, all it's about is like the way in which you referred to me, and you know, I take that with the greatest respect that you would even classify me among that ilk of people, and it's just about the real motherfuckers. Nothing else matters.
Yeah, damn straight. You know, in professional wrestling, we put on a lot of pageantry, so to speak. That's the name of the game. But the guys that succeed and have succeeded over the years, and of course things are so different now, but especially back in the day when men were the realest of motherfuckers, even though it might be an entertainment, an art form, so to speak. You know, whether you say it be music, literature, wrestling, acting, what have you, it's always the real motherfuckers that can reach the most people, and sometimes it's in a good way, and sometimes you're pissing them off. But hey, if you got their attention, then fuck them otherwise.
That's right. You and I touched on that before. You know how the old school wrestlers like didn't take no shit. Like that was in house, and it could easily like walk outside the ring and walk out the back doors into the parking lot, and you know, Artemis, you know, make no mistake, like he communicated that to me very clearly, and I saw it with him dealing with like some jackasses, you know, right in front of me face to face. Like that guy, even at 63, he doesn't take any shit either.
As well he shouldn't. It would be awesome to watch Artemis pile fucking regulate on some young punks.
I think he, you know, as you read in the piece I gave there, I mean, he had to be that. He had to, he was the only one, like, given that place with Ronnie, and he had to regulate between, you know, Ronnie and the band and Ronnie and strangers many times, because you know, Ronnie was a street fighting, hell raising motherfucker. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and he had quite a reputation for being quick to fight, to my understanding. I know you touched on a little bit of that in the article that you posted, but also I've read that in many other places as well, in documentaries and things about Skinner, is that Ronnie did not take shit off of no goddamn body.
No, Artemus made sure to clarify to me that, you know, it wasn't not only taking shit. I mean, Ronnie just loved to fight. You know, if he got drunk and you were close to him, like, and he hadn't done it before, he was usually going to try you. I mean, he didn't care if you were 5'3 or 6'3. And, you know, Artemus, as you read there, like, got clocked in the jaw once. He said Ronnie never tried him again. But he said, you know, this is another thing I left this out of the piece there. I mean, Billy Powell, the piano player, he said Ronnie knocked his front teeth out 3 different times.
Damn.
I can't personally imagine, like, staying in a band for my life career where the singer had knocked my teeth out 3 times. So, I mean, that must mean to me that they really were brothers.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny you say that because the parallels again to wrestling, you beat the shit out of each other, but you have this camaraderie. There's one time that I fucking punched this dude because I thought he pushed me off the apron. It was a referee, and it was the wrong fucking ref. And the guy didn't even hold it against me. He was like, oh, it's okay, man. Mistakes happen. I'm like, dude, you weren't even the right guy, and I fucking punched you. Fucking, I'm sorry. But, you know, fuck, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, you know, going back to wrestling, you know, I spent quite a bit of time one day talking to Don Carnotto, and he told me about once upon a time when, you know, it was an accident, but Big John Studd, you know, took all of his front teeth out. And, you know, he just explained to me, like, that's the business. I knew what I was getting into when I signed up, and I just had to, like, live with it and roll on. That would be really hard for me to do.
Yeah, and it's not a thing that's continued, really. You know, the newer generation of guys are so much easier to get in the business now. So, you know, they really, there's still guys like that, like Tank and Iceberg's not really active very much anymore, but Tank is definitely an enforcer. You know, guys like Sean Tempers, Azrael, they've been in a long time. They came up that old way. So, you know, they'll still rough a guy up if need be. And a lot of guys, they just don't, it's just a foreign concept to them that they might get fucking hit in a wrestling match, and I want to know what the hell they signed up for, but that's a whole other rant that kind of derails us here.
Yeah, to me, it would just be like dealing with the permanent damage. I mean, maybe Billy Powell would have had the money to get implants, but, like, well, you know, what else are you going to do after you get your teeth knocked out but throw some dentures in there?
Yeah, speaking from experience, well, I got me a 4 plate here in front, so that's about all you can do. but man, that's so great talking to you. I'm so good, so honored that you would come on for the last broadcast here on Georgia Wrestling History. I think it's only appropriate. I appreciate all the help that you've done in supplying us with guests and putting us in touch with people, and hopefully some of the other guests that we've talked about but not really been able to make come to fruition, we will do on this new website we're starting, poddyhumor.com, PODDYHUMOR. It's going to be a podcast network, so several, but the Midnight Black Mass is moving there. We're actually not going to be doing it in a live format any longer, and that's to better accommodate guests. That's to better accommodate my own schedule, and I think that, you know, that's going to make the show better overall, and I hope to have you back on with fucking anything that you're promoting, man.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be glad, and, you know, the feeling that you express toward me is reciprocal entirely, and, yeah, hopefully we can get some of the other people on that we've discussed before.
Yeah, I really would like to. That would be awesome in many aspects. There's been a few, but you know, it's just one thing when you're doing live. If the guest doesn't have the time to meet the time that you're running live, then you're just fucked. So you've gotta come up with new and inventive ways. Technology is our friend. As much as I resist it sometimes, it is my friend when it comes to this. Anyway, before we go, any shows you want to plug, any music, any bands you've been listening to, just anything you want to get off your chest to end the interview, man?
I'd say by far the greatest live show I've seen any time in the recent past was that Graveyard show, hands down. And as is usually the case with Charlotte, you know, there weren't many people there, but it didn't matter. Those guys gave it 110% the whole entire time.
You're referring to Sweden's Graveyard, correct?
Absolutely, yeah.
Oh, those guys are fucking awesome, man. I've not been into them for that long, but they have, you know, we've talked about this. I talked about it with Gideon in detail, Gideon Smith, both times he's been on, is that, like, there's still some good metal, you know, but there's even some good new outlaw country, but where is just the fucking good hard rock? And Graveyard answers that question with, it's in fucking Sweden, motherfucker.
Yeah, it's incredible, you know, that guys could come from that far away and be influenced by stuff that's been such a part of our blood growing up here in the South. I mean, you know, I was with a group of friends there, and one of my friend's girlfriends turned to me and said, you know, they sound like a mix between Sabbath and Skinnerd and the Allman Brothers, and, you know, it is that exactly. You can tell those guys have put in long, hard hours sweating it out and playing that stuff and loving that stuff, you know, alone for a long time.
And the fucking singer can wail, and that's a rarity these days, too, you know.
Yeah.
For so long, it wasn't cool to be able to fucking sing, and so you know, and the bands that growl, hey, that's great. They have their style, and they're fucking good at it. You know, music can't be put in a compartmental little box to me. It is what it is, and it lives and breathes all its own. But you know, I never understood why people turned on singers with vocal ability, and the frontman for Graveyard has that, and a pair of balls and soul to screech it out with as well.
Yeah, it's all about the passion, but I don't have to tell you that. I try to tell people this all the time. When you go to see bands, there's a difference in bands who can deliver technically, who are good players, who can get up there and give you that, and people who do it with soul. The two are completely different things, and they're very far apart.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, you can take bands that are both technically proficient and play with soul, but they don't have to be one and the same. They can be exclusive. Talking about it earlier in the program, last Saturday I saw Iron Maiden and Alice Cooper for the first time in my life. And at their age, man, they still fucking delivered the passion and the goods. I said, and I quote, I hope somebody quotes me on this, they outperformed most any band in the last 10 years I've seen live, and those bands were all half their age at the time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, I of course, was old enough to see those bands, like, not in their prime, but, you know, I saw Iron Maiden on Power Slave, and I saw Alice on Constrictor with Vinnie Vincent opening up, Twisted Sister opening for Maiden when I saw them, but you know, like, you or most people might think, like, I saw something that's incredible, but then when I was talking to Ron McGovney, that takes it to another level entirely. He told me about the times that he and James Hetfield would go see Iron Maiden when they were first coming to America, playing clubs in the early days, you know, with Deano and hardly nobody was there, and they were trying to get their friends and acquaintances to come. Like, you have to hear this band, Iron Maiden. It was so underground, Hetfield and McGovney had to make their own Iron Maiden T-shirts to wear into the show.
that, that's, That's great. I love the Deano years, by the way. I mean, Bruce is sounding better than ever now. I think he's really matured into his voice. And, you know, he kind of sounded, he sang out of key a little bit in the 80s. If you notice on some of those very popular live performances, not enough to where it hindered the quality, in my opinion. But you can tell, you know, he was giving it to you raw. He was off key a time or two. Now he is just so crisp and clean and sings within his range. But I honestly, like, it's like picking a favorite child, but I kind of like the Deano stuff a little better. Just me. And that's a metalhead discussion for the ages, of course. But where do you weigh in on that?
Yeah, I agree. I prefer the Deano stuff. And, you know, what you said about the vocals is very interesting. People do, you know, it's not opinion, it's not they seem to. Some people do get better with age. I mean, it's been years ago now, but the one time I saw Little Richard, I promise you, you know, I stood there, you know, mesmerized the entire time. That guy sang better, you know, in the last 15 years than he did in the 50s.
That
I don't really know where that comes from.
Maybe just living, man. You know, life deals you a lot of fucking painful shit. And I think as an artist, the more painful shit you go through, hopefully the more creative you can be. You can channel that into your creativity and your passions, and you can use that as fuel. And that's my theory anyway.
It must have something to do with those people who are able to maintain and hold the fire, because you know, I saw Jerry Lee Lewis once too, and that was the exact opposite. I mean, he could barely get through the set. I think it comes down to what those people are able to maintain in the core of their being for that long a period of time.
Yeah, very interesting discussion. Well, all right, man. If you don't have any plugs or any shows or anything you want the people to know about before we go, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up here. But it is always a pleasure and always fascinating to get to talk to you, and I hope we get to do it more often, my friend.
Oh, me too, and I'm so glad to speak with you in person again, as I stated, you know, started here.
Yeah, when you get the chance, come down to Cornelia and visit us. I'm going to try to get up to Charlotte at some point. There's always a concert or something coming through there, so I always got an excuse to come see you. It's just making it happen, so we'll try to do that, man.
Yeah, I'll get to Georgia again if and when I can, and as I've expressed before, you have an open invitation here anytime.
Fucking outstanding, man. Look forward to seeing you when we do hook it up. Until then, horns in the air, my brother, and thank you as always for helping us out and doing what you do.
Right on, and that's from the heart.
Fucking right, man. Absolutely. Peace. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Robert Everett, wow, what an amazing guest. Former bandmate of G.G. Allin, just done so much in his life in the music realm. He's a guy who's got so many talents, and we're honored that he shares those with us here on the program. We really are. It's always a pleasure, and as I said, an appropriate final guest to end up our time here on the Georgia Wrestling History Radio Network, a man that did so much for the show, and another fantastic interview with no great format, just kind of winging it out. And that's going to do it, fans. Almost. We've got another edition of TV Casualty coming up right now. Actually, going to go ahead and run right into it as we're running out of time here. I want to talk about Batman the Animated Series, of course. It is a classic. We've gone through this, the DC Animated Universe, many times here on TV Casualty, starting with Batman, and it's going to expand even further as we move to PottyHumor.com, but we're getting right through Season 1 of Batman the Animated Series. Episode called Feet of Clay, Parts 1 and 2. See the origin story of Clayface, the story of actor Matt Hagen, who had a disfiguring accident in a car wreck many years ago. He starts working for the criminal mastermind Roland Daggett, who provides him with a monthly supply of an addictive face cream known as Renew You that can temporarily reshape his face back to normal. He wants to take Wayne Enterprises over for marketing expansion, and, well, you know, that's not going to work because Batman's Bruce Wayne, and he's not going to let that happen. But he hires Hagen to commit a murder. Hagen botches the murder, and for doing so, his supply of Renew You is cut off. He breaks into Roland Daggett's lab, voiced by the legendary Robert Stack, by the way. It was a very nice touch. And he pays the price because Roland Daggett's men drown this son of a bitch in the formula and force him to swallow liters of it. So, you know, they leave it with this fucking ghastly vision that this actor, falling on hard times and resulted to petty crime, has been murdered by these guys at the end of episode one. You come back with episode two, you find out that he hasn't, but that it has morphed him into this disgusting blob called Clayface, a name that he later adopts. And he finds out he can change his identity, but it takes a great extensive muscle memory to do so. So it takes a great deal of concentration, meaning his movie career is over, but he can pull small-time heists. One of the first things, of course, he's going to go get revenge on Roland Daggett. And they try to set up an assassination attempt on Lucius Fox, who's in the hospital. And Clayface finds out about it. He's going to go kill Daggett. Batman interrupts. A huge fight essentially breaks down. And then Clayface ends up getting shocked by a massive voltage of electricity and, again, left to believe dead after putting up a major fight as a major threat and a very cool villain introduced into the Batman mythos, Clayface. Many different versions of him. Matt Hagen is one of about four different Clayfaces in the comic book continuity of Batman. There was the Clayface 3, there's the original Clayface Basil Carlo, and a couple more, if memory serves me right, and they were different in many ways. This Clayface is very much an anamorphic blob that has very ghastly face features and can turn his arms and appendages into anything as well as his face. And so essentially he's now fried by the Batman. Batman doesn't kill, but he didn't have any intention. Clayface at the last second says, "I couldn't have asked for a better death scene." And of course you see that his body is actually just a hollow shell and that he lives on. This was written and based off of comics by legendary Marv Wolfman. Screenplay was written by Michael Reeves and Marv Wolfman. It aired originally in September of 1992, directed by Batman veteran Kevin Altieri. And that's another edition, folks, of TV Casualty and another edition of the Midnight Black Mass. Thank you all for your support. I really was overwhelmed by the response we've gotten, by the number of listeners that have tuned into the show over time. I really can't ask for anything more than the support we've gotten here. Start this thing in such an odd niche market that we cover, and we're really, really thankful for all of you. You up your fucking irons. You are the real motherfuckers of this world, supporting the Midnight Black Mass. Thank you once again. And I'm going to leave you with a little Hank 3, a song he wrote in tribute to G.G. Allin. He was also a former guest on the show, the grandson of legendary Hank Williams Sr., son of Hank Williams Jr. And since Robert Everett, of course, was in a band with G.G. Allin, appropriate that we play Hank's cover of G.G.'s Punch, Fight, Fuck. And until next time, join us at PottyHumor.com next Friday night at midnight. Keep one foot in the gutter, one fist in the gold, two horns in the air, and if somebody crosses you, a foot in their ass. I'm the Reverend. Good night.
This song is written and dedicated for G.G. Allin.
Your face. open, smoking, smoking. Now I'm stealing cars. Five.
Thank you for your continued support.